Welcome to Take Charge of Your Health, where we are learning how to take charge of our health. The modern world, and in particular the United States, is caught up in what has been described as a healthcare crisis. So what if there were things that you could do to keep out of the doctor's office and enjoy better health? Tonight, a subject that concerns just about every last one of us. Welcome to Take Charge of Your Health. This is Take Charge of Your Health. I'm John Bradshaw from It Is Written. Thanks for joining me. The World Health Organization says that in 2016, almost 2 billion people aged over 18 were overweight. More than 40% of Americans are dealing with obesity. Many, many more are overweight, and the problem is getting bigger. Carrying more weight than you need to carry is linked to numerous other health issues. So while we're not going to point the finger at anyone or get on anyone's case, we are going to find out what you can do to turn it around, to take charge of your health. You are going to hear from expert physicians. You'll hear from people who have taken the weight off and kept it off. We'll answer frequently asked questions, and we'll hear from Dr. Faye Kazi and Dr. Steve Lee. You've got every reason to be encouraged. What you're about to hear could absolutely revolutionize your life. In talking about weight loss, I'm joined right now by three gentlemen, three physicians. One is Dr. David DeRose, president of Compass Health Consulting. Dr. DeRose, thanks for joining me on Take Charge of Your Health.
Great to be with you, John.
Also, Dr. George Guthrie, who is on the faculty of the Graduate Medical Educational Department at Advent Health in Orlando, Florida. Dr. Guthrie, thanks for taking your time.
Thanks for having us.
And Dr. Harvey Hahn is a cardiologist, the director of the Cardiology Fellowship Training Program at the Kettering Health Network just outside Dayton, Ohio. Dr. Hahn, thanks for being part of Take Charge of Your Health.
Thank you, John.
As we talk about weight loss, I want to start, gentlemen, by asking you why people gain weight. Dr. Hahn, I'll start with you. What causes weight gain?
Basically, I think life happens to you. You start getting busy, married, kids, job, and it's harder to take care of yourself. You exercise less and you start eating more conveniently.
Dr. Guthrie, are there other reasons that people gain weight? What if there are, what are they?
Well, our culture is a bit unfair to us because they've designed foods that are very hard to put down. They even advertise, I'll bet you can't eat just one. So, you know, the environment that we're in, not only does it leave us a bit sedentary, but it also feeds us a lot of calories.
Dr. DeRose, I think we're beginning to touch on this. So what is it that actually goes on inside a human body when weight is being gained? Describe that process. What's going on in there?
Well, I think the scariest thing that happens is you accumulate what we call adipocytes or adipocytes, depending on where in the world you have learned to speak the English language. And those fat cells are not just quiescent storage factories, if you will. They're not just storehouses for the fat, but they are actually biologically active cells. They're producing inflammatory compounds. They're increasing our risk of things like cancer and cardiovascular disease. So it's scary business to us as physicians because it's not this old idea. Hey, yeah, you put on some pounds, you can just lose it. These fat storage cells are actually doing damage to your health, and it's why it's so critical to try to trim down, even if it's a little bit, can make a big difference.
Dr. Hahn, weight gain, as Dr. DeRose just mentioned, has this flow-on effect that sets people up to be predisposed towards many other different kinds of health problems. Excess weight is the culprit in lots and lots of health issues. Tell me what some of those health issues are.
Yeah, if you have increased weight, you're set up to have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, even metabolic syndrome, or all the way to full-blown diabetes. And all those risk factors can kind of culminate in heart disease, with heart attacks, stroke, blocked up arteries in your legs, causing muscle pain when you walk, and even it's directly related to cancer.
So getting the weight down is a huge help in lots and lots of areas, but I think it's important that we emphasize this and speak directly to this. Dr. Guthrie, there are some people who pretty well cannot lose weight. I'm not trying to give people a get out of jail free card or provide somebody with an excuse, but there are times, aren't there, where for a variety of reasons, someone is just big or bigger than they want to be. What are some of those issues?
I think one of the things we need to recognize here is that your weight, your overall weight, may not be the most important factor in your overall health. Dr. DeRose mentioned the inflammation that's present. Dr. Hahn has pointed out that that inflammation tends to cause a lot of problems throughout the system. I like to tell people you need to be moving towards a lower weight. You don't have to lose all that weight in order to be healthy. You just need to start moving in that direction. As scripture says, you know, man looks on the outside, you may look overweight, but God looks at the heart. And as one starts to lose weight, that inflammation tends to decrease. So those people that cannot lose weight, I try to get them to take their eyes off the mirror and start enjoying the feelings of health that come as they start moving in that direction. They may never reach that ideal bathing suit weight or that figure that they're after, but they can have good health even if they're overweight.
Dr. DeRose, somebody is overweight, and now this isn't somebody who is stuck there and can't get out, but somebody who might be able to do something about it. Where do we begin? How do we start talking people through the process of taking off the pounds?
You know, if you want to make it as simple as possible, what we've said in the weight loss field for years, it's really an equation. It's calories in versus calories out. You might say that oversimplifies things, but really that's a lot of what we look at. So if we're trying to move in the right direction, like Dr. Guthrie said, we're wanting to look at simple ways that we can decrease the calories that we take in. Maybe we're going to leave off those soft drinks and have water instead. We're going to look at ways to try to increase the calories out. We're going to perhaps increase our activity. Maybe it's just going to be a 5-minute walk compared to nothing. That's a quantum leap. And when you start decreasing the calories in, putting more calories out, you start moving in the direction generally of, if not weight loss, actually losing fat and building muscle.
Dr. Hahn, I would not be the only person surprised to learn that you have knowledge of this from an experiential, personal point of view. You lost weight. You were much bigger once. So a couple of questions for you. What was the tipping point? What motivated you to do something? And what did you do in order to get the results that you saw?
Yeah, basically, like I said at the beginning, I was busy with my job. I got married. I had 2 children. And weight just kind of creeped on. So after my cardiology fellowship training was done, I put on about 45 pounds. And at that time, I was not exercising at all. And I was eating anything and everything I could get my hands on. So that's why I was gaining weight. The big turning point for me, the internal motivation that made me kind of look at myself, was I tore ligaments in my left knee. And I quickly realized that the reason that happened was I was carrying a backpack of fat, a 45-pound backpack, every step, every day on top of me. And if I didn't kind of get my act together, I wasn't going to be able to play, you know, basketball with my 2 boys. I was going to be just watching them from the sideline. I didn't want to do that. So that was really strong motivation to actually just take my own advice, follow the health message, and get healthy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Dr. Guthrie, let me ask you this. Is medication the way out? Is this the sort of thing where somebody who is battling weight should go to the doctor and say, hey, I write me a prescription, please? Is that a help? Is it a hindrance? Can it be a little bit of both? What's the role of medication in weight loss?
Well, medications can be helpful for weight loss. The problem is when you finish the medication, the weight tends to come back. One really needs to change their lifestyle to make this a long-term health issue. What's more, many of the weight loss medications actually cause problems for our health. Some of them have killed people. We've taken them off the market because of that. So medications all have side effects. We really, when we get overweight, we change our physiology. And that physiology is towards inflammation. If we throw a pill in to try to change a part of that in that physiology, we're not fixing the whole thing. So the rest of it continues to happen. One has to change the lifestyle, diet, exercise, and other things to really see that weight come off in a way that it can improve the health over the long haul.
Okay, Dr. Hahn, let's say somebody is hearing us and they say, right, I've got to make some changes. They come to you, they say, doctor, help me get started. So where does a person get started? They want to start rolling some of this back and start to slowly seeing gains, which in this case would be losses. Dr. Hahn, where do we begin?
Yeah, I think the one thing I try not to do is tell them jog for 20 minutes a day or eat more of this or avoid this food. You actually can take like a diet history and an exercise history and see what they like to eat and what they like to do, and then really work with them to maybe make one agreed change to work on to the next appointment. Like if someone drinks a six pack of Coke a day, you can ask them, can you go down to 5 a day? Or can you eat one more piece of fruit, one more serving of fruit per day, instead of making these radical changes that are going to be really hard to keep?
Okay, Dr. Guthrie, let me ask you this. So we've spoken about diet, but I want to ask you about diets. Lots of diets that are around, the keto diet and the paleo diet and the Atkins diet and this diet and that diet. And anyway, they're everywhere and you know all about them. Is there a diet that you recommend? What's your relationship with or your attitude toward diets, Dr. Guthrie?
For long-term health, I don't think a diet is a good idea. I encourage people to make a lifestyle change. And I encourage them to eat more plants. Plants tend to be high in fiber, no calories, high in water, no calories. So they fill you up. And we call this the caloric density. So when the caloric density is low, you can eat till you're full and you don't get too many calories in. This is a reasonable kind of way of attacking the problem of too many calories in and not enough calories out.
Okay, Dr. DeRose, two things for you. One, what do we tell the person who says, oh my goodness, that sounds boring, plants? And secondly, where did we first encounter the idea of the diet that Dr. Guthrie is proposing? Two questions. What do you say to that guy or that lady who says, oh? And secondly, where did we first see this diet promoted?
John, I have never had that question asked me as masterfully, because you deftly connected the two answers. And we all well know that that diet first comes to us from the book of Genesis, where God created the perfect, the most enjoyable state of existence for the human race. And it was nothing that they were foregoing. It was entirely pleasurable. And our problem is, like Dr. Guthrie alluded to, we've gotten used to eating all these artificial foods. Our tastes have changed. And the research is just stunning. If you make a change in your diet, even something that's not palatable today, unless you sabotage yourself, the Creator has made us in such a way that we can develop new enjoyments. So those lower fat foods, those lower sodium foods, those lower caloric density foods, I start eating more of those, I'm going to start enjoying them, and I will be reconnecting with that optimal diet that God gave Adam and Eve in the beginning.
Okay, Dr. Hahn, what I want to ask you is this. So somebody is starting down this road, and it may just seem to them to be the longest, I got to lose 200 pounds or whatever the case might be. Is there a shortcut? Can you short circuit this and somehow race to the finish line faster? What's your advice to the person who wants to see instant results?
Yeah, I think the one thing is you have to kind of remember it took years to put on all this weight. It's probably going to take years to take it off. A recommended weight loss goal is 2 pounds per week, which most people think is pathetic. But if you do the math, that's over 100 pounds in 1 year. So you can make a huge impact. I think the big thing is like every long, difficult journey starts with the first single step. You're going to have to make some change now. And then over time, small changes, you know, built on top of each other, make a huge impact.
Dr. Guthrie, I'd like to ask you this question, and that is about a certain shortcut that some people take. What about lap band surgery or bariatric surgery? Dr. Guthrie, How should we relate to that? Do you go there first? Is it a last ditch thing? What is it?
One of the things that has been laughable to me about those getting these surgeries to help them lose weight is that the doctor will often tell the patient, you have to lose 50 pounds or 30 pounds, whatever it is, before I'll do the surgery on you. To me, it's much more the kind of the lifestyle component. We know that doing the surgery does help there and extends life in people that are obese. We have, 20 years of experience from Scandinavia demonstrating that. But these surgeries, I've cared for these people after they've had the surgery, never done the surgery myself because that's not my skill. But after the surgery, there are continued problems with nutrition. Things don't absorb as well because the stomach has been short-circuited. When it's just a banding sort of a thing, the stomach will stretch out if people eat past it. So it's really not a necessarily a pleasant and kind of successful experience.
Dr. DeRose, you've got anything to add about this type of approach to weight loss?
You know, none of us want to speak ill of something that's helped people. But by the same token, we have to think with all these things, as we talked about earlier, medications have side effects. Of course, surgery does, too. Some years ago, I took care of a woman, just did great on a intensive lifestyle program, lost a lot of weight, ended up coming back through a program. I was working at the time at an intensive lifestyle change facility. And but then when she went back, she saw that her boyfriend was able to lose the weight with bariatric surgery. And she said, well, boy, that sounds a lot better than, you know, sticking with a healthy lifestyle. The tragedy was she died on the table of that surgery. I mean, that's not a common scenario. But the point is, when we take shortcuts, sometimes they're too short.
Okay. All right, let's go. I want to ask each of you for some closing thoughts. Are there things that people don't know that they should, or is there one piece of advice or wisdom or insight that you'd like to share, Dr. Hahn?
Yeah, I think the big thing is people are focused on weight loss, but what people really want to do is actually lose fat. And one of probably the best ways to do that isn't running on a treadmill for hours, it's actually lifting weights and building up your muscle mass. Cardiovascular training is great. I totally endorse it. I love doing it myself. But for return on investment, that's probably the worst time investment for losing fat.
Dr. George Guthrie, give me some closing thoughts.
Well, I've got too much to say, so let's try this. When I was in medical school, we just discovered that olive oil, monounsaturated fat, is good for cholesterol. And what do you know? The cardiology residents running around the hospital had little flasks of olive oil in their pockets, which they would take out and take a drink out of now and then to help, of course, improve their heart health. I had the privilege of working with one of these cardiologists a couple of decades later, and he'd really put on quite a bit of weight. This is kind of a challenge that we have when we take concentrated foods. It's the whole plant foods that we eat that bring us the health. There's just so much in them. We should be focusing on minimally processed foods for most of our diet. I tell patients, use your animal products as a condiment. Focus on the whole plant.
Dr. DeRose, final word.
You know, John, you and I had the privilege of focusing on the Methuselah factor in a series of programs. It's something that's overlooked by a lot of people. It's improving blood fluidity. And if people have run up against roadblocks in their attempts to shed some pounds, really look into this this topic of improving blood fluidity. I call it the Methuselah factor, but it can help your cells to get better oxygenation. That can help with weight loss. And it's something that really can be incorporated into a lifestyle without too much challenge if you look at some of the practical things that you and I have talked about in the past.
One of the things I appreciate greatly about what you've shared, we've talked about lasting real change, and no one had to do the impossible. This is attainable. Thank you, gentlemen, for making it. I'm joined now by Yves Monnier, a friend and one of our It Is Written team members. And Yves has had a really interesting weight loss journey all of his own. Yves, welcome to Take Charge of Your Health.
It's good to be with you here.
Okay, so tell me, when did you come to the realization, or how did you come to the place where you said, got to make some changes?
Well, I've known that I needed to make some changes a long time ago, but the pivotal moment took place about 2 years and some months ago. And that's when I was significantly overweight. Probably the more correct term was obese. I had some significant digestive issues, high blood pressure, something that I've had for many, many years. And I couldn't sleep well at night. So here I am going to the doctor's office for my regular annual checkup. And I'm bracing myself for some of the same stuff that he's going to tell me, like he's been telling me year after year after year. But this time, in addition to the stuff that I anticipated, he says, well, let me add another wrinkle. We've taken some tests, and guess what? You also have the beginnings of a fatty liver. What? Fatty liver? And so I'm just imagining the worst. And yes, it is the worst, because if the liver goes and continues to go bad, it opens up a whole can of worms. So I said, doctor, listen to me. What do I need to do? I'm thinking maybe he's going to suggest another pill or something. And he says, well, Mr. Meunier, my recommendation for all of your ailments, or these basic ailments that you're facing now, what you need to do is lose weight.
So what you do, you took it seriously. When you're looking at this thing, you say, how do I start? How did you answer the question? How did you start?
Well, looking back, I called them my four E's. Okay, so the first E was eat better. And I really made my mom, would have made my mom proud, because all these years growing up, she was telling me, eat your vegetables, eat, you know, the fresh stuff. So finally, I'm listening to my mother. So I'm eating vegetables like there's no tomorrow. I'm eating fruit. I'm eating everything that's fresh. I mean, I'm just eating better. Also, as I'm eating better, I'm eliminating some stuff that should not be part of my diet. And so sodas, gone. Water, absolutely. Lots and lots of water. And also sugar, or as much sugar as possible, all the sweets, gone. So that was the eating better part. Now, the second E is eating less. Slowly but surely, I started to see things beginning to change with my weight. So that's number two. The third E was exercise. So I started walking a little bit at first, a little bit more as time progressed, and then a few miles every day. And then I said, hey, maybe I could even run. I'm not sure that was a smart thing to do, because pretty soon my knees started to hurt. So it's like, oh man, I want to go a little faster than walking. So I said, hey, maybe I should just get a bike. Got a bike, and same principle, you know, left foot, right foot, and a little faster. And so now I ride my bike about 50 to 70 miles a week, and it's great exercise. Finally, the last E, John, expectations. You know, we're used to immediate gratification. I'm certainly one of those. I mean, I want to see things happen now, as soon as possible. I had to put in my mind realistic expectations. And that is, it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a hard journey. And it's going to take a while. And so here I am about 2 years later. And the result, John, do you want to hear it?
Yes, I do. Tell us about the result.
All right, the result is I lost over 70 pounds, made significant lifestyle changes, so it was not a pill, like I already said. And so what happened to my blood pressure?
Right.
I realized that, hey, I don't need blood pressure medication anymore, because my blood pressure went down, and it's staying down without pills. So that was awesome.
Okay, just briefly, you took off all that weight and you've kept it off, and it's been off for some time. Just quick, what are you doing to keep it off? How do you keep it off?
Well, I keep doing the same things. I keep eating better. But one thing I do very faithfully, and that is exercise. Every morning I try to walk 3 miles a day, and it takes about an hour. But that means getting up earlier, and it just gets the blood flowing, and it just feels great. So there is a sacrifice involved. I mean, the temptation, John, is just, whew, I might as well stay in bed a little longer. I'm tired. It was a late night working. I don't want to get up this early, but no. I've come to the conclusion that in order to maintain where I'm at, I need to continue to pay the price. And let me tell you, it's a price that is worth paying, because I feel better than I've ever felt. I've often thought to myself, if only I had done this a long, long time ago, what a difference it would have been.
Yves Monnier, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure to be with you and share a little bit of my journey.
I hope you are encouraged as you are learning how you can take charge of your health. There are so many things that you can do that make an enormous difference to your health today and to your health outcomes. Well, let's speak again with Dr. Faye Kazi. She is a dietitian, a health professional, and author. And I'm grateful to be able to welcome her to Take Charge of Your Health. Faye, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you again for having me.
Hey, let's talk about water. So what would you as a dietitian advise when it comes to water? Why is it so important? What are some simple ways we can get more of it into our, well, into ourselves?
Yeah, so wonderful question. Water actually is a very underestimated nutrient. And actually, it is considered a nutrient the same way that nutrients that you'd find in fruits and vegetables. So the wonderful thing about water is that it's available in a lot of whole food, plant-based foods, such as obviously fruits and vegetables are very high in water. They're available also in grains, in legumes. You can find water pretty much everywhere in the whole food diet family. So what you want to think about when it comes to water in terms of getting more of it into your diet, obviously drinking your water is the best way and it's the most pure way to get your water, but it will be available as well in fruits and vegetables if you want to get your water from there. So there's lots of recommendations out there for how much water you're supposed to drink, but actually it is interesting to know that, I'm not sure if you knew this, but this typical 8 cups a day water recommendation actually could be traced back to 1921. And it's very interesting. There wasn't a lot of research behind it. It was just the author himself of this article studied the amount of water that exited his body, whether through urine or through sweat, and he came up with 8 cup recommendation. So today, though, we do like to depend on evidence-based research. And recently, they were able to produce an amazing study on 20,000 individuals. The Adventist Health Study actually conducted this, 20,000 people, half of which were vegetarian. And it was found that those who drank over 5 cups of water a day, 5 or more cups of water a day, were 50% less likely to get heart disease or to die from heart disease than individuals who were only drinking 2 cups of water or less. So that's a big wake-up call in terms of the benefits of this nutrient. And the study stated that this could be because of the dilution of the blood and decreasing the viscosity and just making it overall a lot cleaner for the system. And as you probably already know, 70 to 80% of your body is water. So constantly or every day replenishing this amount is important.
Dr. Kazi, one more time, how many cups a day, how many glasses of water a day would you recommend?
Well, according to several studies that came out recently, we have the Institute of Medicine, the World Health Organization, and other authorities from Europe finally came up with the recommendation. For women, you're looking at about 4 to 7 cups on average per day of water. We're talking just water, not fluids you can get from other not water you can get from other fluids or foods. And then for men, it's 6 to 11 cups of water, excuse me. That is the recommendation. Of course, if you're an athlete and you're burning a lot of calories outside and sweating, it's going to be different. You're probably going to need to add a few more cups above that. But in general, for the average person, those are the current accepted recommendations.
Okay, Dr. Kazi, I have one more question for you. People thinking of losing weight, trying to lose weight, but they want to go out to eat. Ay, ay, ay. What do you do if you're going out and you're wanting to be health conscious, particularly in the area of watching your weight?
Right. So that's a really good question. And it's hard to navigate when you have all of these huge manufacturing industries that are really trying to sell their not so healthy food to you. So here's a few tips that can help you, though. when you go out, the first thing you need to think about, how do I pick something that is not as heavily processed? When I say processed, it's food that isn't exposed to too much heat, to too much oil, or is changed up to become something that it didn't originally used to be. So those are some three easy principles you can think about. And so, for example, let's say you want to go to Chick-fil-A and you want to get a chicken sandwich. So the better alternative to the typical, you know, fried chicken burger, you could go with the grilled chicken burger. So the chicken is not actually doused in a batter and deep fried. It's just grilled on an open flame. So that one is a little bit better. Now, if you want to take it a step further, you'll go with, let's say, a chicken wrap, which is a whole wheat wrap versus just the refined white bun. And it has some vegetables in it and it has some grilled chicken in it. That's an easier, healthier way to navigate. And instead of going with those delicious waffle fries, trust me, I know those are good. You can go with a side salad or a fruit cup, which they do offer in fast food restaurants right now, especially at Chick-fil-A. Another example would be, let's say my favorite is Chipotle. And I love it because they really do have some really healthy items that are not as heavily processed. For example, you have all the different dishes you can choose from. You can go with a whole grain rice rather than, so it's the brown rice over the white rice. And then you can go with adding a sofrita instead of the meat, which is the scrambled tofu. You throw in those extra grilled vegetables on top of that. If you want a meat source, you can have it. The meat that they do have is grilled. And then it's a matter of topping it with all those delicious salsas, which is basically just chopped up tomatoes and wonderful nutrients there. And then you have the lettuce, and you can ask them for a little bit of cheese or a little bit of sour cream. You don't have to go too crazy with that. And get a nice, handsome helping of that avocado right on top of that. That's actually a pretty good, healthy, fast food, outside the door, quick and easy option. You know, and there are, of course, other options as well.
Really appreciate it. Dr. Fakazi, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is something I really enjoy, asking our physicians the frequently asked questions. What are the questions you get asked again and again by the people with whom you work? Let me start with you, Dr. Guthrie. What is a frequently asked question that you hear when it comes to the question of weight loss?
I see people losing weight, starting the exercise and the dietary changes, and they get down to the place where they kind of reach a plateau. The weight's not coming off anymore. And they ask me, what can I do? What's going on? And so I like to share several kind of clues. And I think you've set it up here so I can tell you a little bit about my own favorite soapbox when it comes to lifestyle. And that is, when you eat makes nearly as much matter as what you eat. So I like to put it this way. If you're flying in a plane from Orlando to Paris, do you want them to put the fuel in the plane when you start here in Orlando or after you get to Paris? I mean, there's a gestalt to this. We need to feed the airplane. We need to put the fuel in when we start. And indeed, the science supports this. When we take the same number of calories in the morning, our weight will tend to come off better. If we take the same meal in the evening, when we just lay down and sleep, then what can happen but store that energy? And indeed, one of the best things one can do is to move their food towards the beginning of the day and minimize the amount of food in the evening.
Okay, let me follow up on that. And I know you don't want to be too prescriptive or too rigid here, but if I'm eating after a certain hour, what would that hour be where you're saying, yeah, you might want to roll that back? What's too late?
I try not to get that specific. The goal is to go to bed with an empty stomach.
Okay, that's good enough.
So if it's, you know, if it's an apple at 6:30, my own habit is to have breakfast and then lunch and then nothing in the evening. Actually, when you sleep with nothing in your stomach, your gut makes a lot of melatonin. You tend to sleep better. You're more rested in the morning. As a matter of fact, breakfast tastes better. And once the cycle gets going, you really would rather not go back to that old way of eating.
Outstanding. That's very helpful. Dr. Harvey Hahn, frequently asked question. What do you hear and how do you answer?
Yeah, one of the big ones is, what is the best exercise to do? And my advice to the patient is, What do you like to do? What are you going to do? It's got to be something sustainable that you're going to keep doing as you make a lifestyle change. A lot of people treat exercise like a punishment. I ate an extra croissant. That means 20 more minutes on the treadmill. That line of thinking is just going to make you miserable. So it's great to actually play if you can, train if you can't. But the last thing you really want to do is exercise just to do it.
Dr. David DeRose, what's another question you hear frequently? How do you respond?
You know, sometimes people say, hey, I'm willing to tackle one thing. Is there one thing that would give me the most bang for my buck? And I'll just tell you from the experience I've had as a physician treating patients, probably the single biggest thing that I've seen in multiple patients that has made a difference is where they say, you know, I'm going to cut out those sugar sweetened beverages. I'm going to get rid of those soft drinks. I'm going to get rid of the juices. And they just move to drinking water. Or at least, even if they don't make it that extreme, they just drop off the soft drinks. I remember a patient, he came in, he dropped like 30 or 40 pounds. I said, what are you doing? He said, I just stopped buying the soft drinks. So if you're looking for one thing to do, if you say, I don't know where to start, that's a powerful way to start. And I've seen it multiple times.
I've seen the same thing. That really is powerful. Dr. Guthrie, what's another frequently asked question?
Well, I'll feed off of what Dr. DeRose has said. You know, the Stanford weight loss study was designed for a year to look at people's diet, and it had everything from Atkins to Ornish, and they compared kind of what people ate and how their weight came off. Once the study was done, they went back and looked at the data since they had all the nutritional data, and they asked the question, what about water? And about every liter of water a day accounted for about 2 kilos or around 4 pounds of weight loss, no matter which diet they were in. It doesn't work for dairy. It doesn't work for milk. It doesn't work for sweetened beverages, as Dr. DeRose pointed out, or even the fruit juices. We often think that orange juice is a health food. No, it only really worked for water.
Dr. Hahn, I'm going to ask you this question, and I hope you don't mind me taking the lead on this one, because I think it's very, very important. Motivation. What does a person do to find motivation? Because I think most of us know, maybe all of us know, you ought to keep your weight in the right range. But it's getting around to doing it that can be the challenge. What do you advise in terms of motivation? How can a person find motivation and motivation that will really keep the fire burning?
Yeah, I think the important thing to note is when you have external motivation, like a doctor telling you, oh, I want to look good for my 20th anniversary high school reunion, those things are very short-lived and they're not very powerful. The really powerful motivations are the internal one. And that's the ones that say, I want to be on less medication. I want to be healthier. I want to travel with my spouse. I want to be alive for my kids and my grandkids. Things like that can get you over the hump. These other motivations, such as I want to get in bikini shape or get a six-pack, that's not enough to get you over and get you healthy.
Fantastic, gentlemen. I appreciate it immensely. Dr. Harvey Hahn, Dr. George Guthrie, Dr. David DeRose, thanks for joining me on Take Charge of Your Health. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, John.
Kelly Green has a remarkable story when it comes to weight loss. Not only did she experience weight loss, but that weight loss was an integral part of another remarkable transformation in her life. Kelly Green is joining us from Northern California. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's talk about this weight loss. You can fill in the details, but you lost a little bit of weight. Tell me a little about that.
Well, I actually had to change my lifestyle. I have always been a little bit overweight, and I went to the depression recovery program and I realized that I was actually obese. I weighed about 215 pounds when I got there, and little under 2 years, I lost a total of 60 pounds.
Well, that's fantastic. We want to say congratulations. I want to talk to you specifically about this, but then we're going to get to the other question in a moment. What sort of things do you credit the weight loss for? What were the steps that you took? And maybe part of it was taking a lot of steps, but what were the things that helped you shed the pounds?
It was a lot of changing my thinking. Mental health has been a challenge for me. I had to really deep you know, dive deep into what the root of the problem was. And once I figured that out, the steps to weight loss were pretty amazing and easy to follow. It was, you know, setting the alarm to get up and exercise in the morning and making an easy breakfast like oatmeal and eating the right foods to get me through the day and give me the energy that I needed and drinking a lot of water. Those are the keys to weight loss: exercise, eating the right foods, and water.
Now I'm going to ask you this question. When you're many pounds overweight, you're probably there because you were eating some of the, let's call them the wrong foods, but I'm going to guess, foods that you loved. So now you're not eating those things. Do you miss them? Is there a great big hole in your life, or are you saying, oh, no, no, this new plan, it's okay, and I'm enjoying it?
I can honestly say that I don't miss those foods. Those foods I was using as coping skills. And now that I have been, you know, getting those character defects exposed and dealt with, I don't need to comfort myself with those, you know, bad habits, I guess.
Okay, now here's what's really interesting. You lost a whole lot of weight, but that was also part of another transformation that was taking place in your life. So without the weight loss, likely you wouldn't have experienced, okay, fill in the rest of the story. What else has been going on in your life?
If I would not have lost the weight, I probably would not have been able to feel good about myself. And the depression and the anxiety would still be very, very prominent in my life. And coping would have been, I would have been incapable of healthy coping skills.
Okay, so talk about that. The depression, the anxiety, where had that taken you? How tough had it become for you?
It was so bad. I was contemplating suicide, and I even brought something into action. Thank God that divine intervention happened, because it could have been a different story.
So there you were at a real low. You realized something sort of had to change. Not only did you lose weight, a considerable amount of weight, that impacted in a positive way your mental health, and in a very real way, it impacted your whole life. Isn't that fantastic?
Yes.
Hey, so how did you get onto the track to improve mental health? What did you do? What got you from wherever you were to where you are now?
Unfortunately for me, I became addicted to a very powerful opioid called OxyContin, and that led to some severe depression. And my grandmother recognized some very serious red flags, and she knew about Dr. Nedley's depression and anxiety program and recommended that I sign up for that, and I did.
And it has evidently been life-changing.
Yes.
Fantastic. Let me ask you this question. I know everybody's different. Back at the start of this journey, would you have said, okay, I think I can become well? Or were you in a place where you just thought, this is impossible, I'm stuck where I am? What was your outlook at the time?
If I didn't have my grandmother to point that out, I'd probably still be stuck in that depression. I couldn't recognize it. I mean, I knew I didn't like the way I felt, but I couldn't physically get myself out without someone pointing it out to me.
You know, I'm so grateful that you shared your story. It's a story that we can come at from lots and lots of angles. You lost a considerable amount of weight. Your health is so much better, but your mental health is so much better. You really got your life back. Kelly Green, thank you so much for sharing your story with me.
Thank you for having me.
We both know it's really important to take care of your health, and there are times that you are motivated, inspired to make changes. That time came in my life when I watched my father being wheeled away for heart surgery. My dad died much too young. He had heart surgery, and a few years later, he died of a heart attack. As I stood looking down at Dad on the hospital bed, I realized I'm my father's son. where he is now, I will be later. I live the same lifestyle, ate the same kind of food. His genes are my genes. I thought to myself, I got to start making some changes, and I wondered what changes they could be. You know, it's important in some cases to get out of your life some of the things that you've grown to love. They become habitual in your diet. Then you learn it might not be good for you. The first thing you do is you deny it, then you make excuses for it, and then far too often you say, so be it, it's bad for me, but I love it. So I want to share with you something, thanks to my friends at Heritage Foods. Now, they didn't pay me to tell you this. I didn't pay them. I called up my friends at Heritage and I said, hey, can I share on Take Charge of Your Health some of your products? You see, they produce the Worthington line of meatless meats, and it's fantastic. It tastes great, and it is good for you. For example, deli slices. These are meat-free. There's five different varieties. Chicken, but no feathers. Corned beef, but no moo. It's really good. It's good quality stuff. The X Burger, with more protein than most other plant-based burgers. You know that there are other meat substitutes out there. Sure, there are. But I'm telling you about the Worthington line because I know this food. I've tried this food and I like it. You'll love this burger. If you try this, you will never have another good reason to go and get one of those bad for you burgers. Lots of protein, not a lot of sodium, really, really good. So where do you get the Worthington line from? You go online to eatworthington.com, eatworthington.com. You can find out where you can find Worthington products near you. The reason I'm sharing this with you is because often you get stuck and you say, where would I be without this in my life? Well, you might be here without that in your life. You're certainly going to be a whole lot healthier and live a lot longer. Some things are just plain bad for you. So you can substitute, and these substitutes are great. And I know what somebody's thinking. Is he going to pick this thing up here with the deli slices in it and eat it right as we watch? Is he going to pick up the deli dog? Oh, did I mention the deli dogs? Is he going to pick that up and eat it and maybe drip mustard on himself? Is he going to eat this X burger right there while we watch? The answer is no, I'm not going to do that. But I'd like to, well, I probably wouldn't like to do it while you watch, but I'd like to while you don't. These are really good. So think about transitioning away from the bad. Grab hold of the good. Here's one way you can do it. Thanks to Worthington, really good products. They taste great. And they're good for you. Something else that's good for you, exercise. We know that by now. So I want to welcome to Take Charge of Your Health our nightly exercise instructor. How to do it, what to do, how to do it safely, how to do it where you're at, how to get the most out of it. It's good for you. Makes life better all the way around. So again, welcome with thanks, Dr. Steve Lee.
Thanks, John. I'd like to talk about my favorite form of exercise, cycling. I think the best form of exercise is the kind that's built into the way you live your life. Because let's face it, we're all lazy, and if we make exercise optional, we'll be tempted to skip it. I've been riding my bike to work every day for the past decade, and I credit much of my relatively good health to that. It's built into the way I live, and I have to ride my bike to work whether I feel like exercising or not. Studies show that about 30% of Americans commute less than 5 miles to work, and that's an easily bikeable distance. And chances are you'll be faster on a bike than in a car. Another 24% commute about 6 to 10 miles a day, and that's also a bikeable distance. I highly recommend commuting to work by bike. But biking, apart from commuting, is also a fun form of exercise. And there's many different kinds of bikes. There's an around town bike that you can use to ride around your neighborhood and get that one ingredient you forgot for dinner from the local grocery store. There's mountain bikes for people who like to ride in the woods. There's road bikes for people that want to go fast and cover large distances on the road. And there's even electric bikes for people that want a little extra boost. If you can afford an electric bike, that's some of the most fun you're going to have since you first got your bike as a kid. The whole world would be cleaner and friendlier, and we would all be healthier and wealthier if we cycled more.
Okay, let's be sure we're taking care of ourselves spiritually. If you're going to take charge of your health, take charge of your spiritual health. So let's talk about this as we look at Creation Life Study Guide number 4, produced by It Is Written in association with Advent Health. This one is titled Activity. It's another good one. I want to look at, I'll start at the beginning, then I'll kind of get down towards the end. We don't have time to look at it all, but that's okay because you can download this. And in just a few minutes, I will tell you where you can download this and other resources. So, oh, and there's a special resource I want to tell you about tonight as well, in addition to study guide number 4 in the Creation Life Study Guide series. Question 2. Well, firstly, as a matter of fact, the lesson begins with a wonderful story about the benefits of activity. Speaks of a fellow named David who was in his mid-50s, went to his doctor for a physical, got bad news, decided he'd do something about it, began to exercise, lost 65 pounds, and was told by his doctor, "You have reversed your diabetes, no more medication, no more nothing, forget about it, just keep doing what you're doing." And those are the kind of results you get when you take charge of your health. So, question number 2, where do positive lifestyle choices begin? Where do you get the wherewithal, the drive, the ability to make changes in your life and to keep those changes there in your life where you want them to be? So listen to this. It's from the Psalms. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do His commandments. His praise endures forever." When you acknowledge that God is the maker of the human mind, you'll hold God in a high enough regard to allow God to work in your life. You follow God's guidelines. You say to yourself, okay, I want to do well physically, so I'm giving myself over to you to follow your suggestions and to receive your assistance. You know, when you really understand faith in God, it's not simply about ascribing to a set of doctrines, figuring out what the Bible teaches about this subject or that subject, and that'll do. Christianity, vital Christianity, is about allowing God to dwell in you. To take it a step further, about letting Jesus live His life in you. So when you're looking for positive lifestyle choices, when you turn it over to God and say, "I'm willing to do it your way, come into my life and do what only you can do," then God will do in you what you're not able to do for yourself. And life just changes dramatically and dramatically for the better. I'm going to jump down near to the end of this study and look at a little section that says, if you are physically active, you may. And you know that in Take Charge of Your Health, none of this is a blanket promise, a guarantee. We all respond differently in different ways. The principles are the same. Some things are good for you, some things are bad for you. Some things you want in your life, some things you don't want in your life. I just wouldn't want you to be frustrated and say, "I've tried and tried and tried, but somehow my body just won't cooperate." Talk with a physician. Find medical experts you trust. Go and see your doctor and talk to your doctor about that. You keep putting one foot in front of another and your best foot forward. Talk to God about it and follow His direction. You'll see results. You'll see great results. You'll see good results. Okay, if you're physically active regularly, you may prevent chronic diseases such as heart disease, cancer, and stroke. They are the 3 leading health-related causes of death. Being physically active helps you turn those aside. That's great news. You may control your weight, make your muscles stronger, reduce fat, promote strong bone, muscle, and joint development. That's important. You can condition your heart and your lungs, build overall strength and endurance, improve your sleep. One of the reasons we don't sleep at night is because we're not active during the day. Decrease the potential of becoming depressed, increase your energy and self-esteem. Hey, where do you get those from? Well, from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Service. And those are good principles. That's what you can experience, you may experience, if you are regularly physically active. So what about Jesus? We don't read about Jesus jogging, do we? Riding a bike? Well, the question asked here is, did Jesus get a lot of exercise? Well, let's read from John chapter 4. "Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria." Jesus did a lot of traveling. He didn't camp in Jerusalem the entire time. He was up at the top of the Sea of Galilee a lot, at a place called Capernaum. He was from Galilee. That's far from Jerusalem. Every time he went down to Jerusalem, he went on foot. Now, there's nothing that says he didn't ride a donkey some of the way or all of the way, but basically people traveled on foot back then. It has been estimated, and it's recorded here, that Jesus may have walked in his lifetime, his relatively brief lifetime, more than 20,000 miles. So Jesus wasn't driving a car. He wasn't taking the bus. And as grateful as we are for those inventions, those technological developments, they do prevent us from getting as much exercise as we'd get if we didn't have them. So think about walking to work if you can, or riding your bike to work if you can. For some people, it's just impossible. I know, I get it. But come home and instead of flopping down in front of the TV, why don't you say instead of watching that for 30 minutes, you take a 30-minute walk. You're investing in your life, in your mental well-being and in your physical well-being. The idea is to get active. And here's what I've learned. After slacking for a while, once I get back into the exercise groove, I don't want to miss exercise. I look forward to it. It's like, I gotta go. And you build it into your daily routine and you're so much better off for it. So Jesus absolutely got a lot of exercise. Now, I want to share this with you. How can I improve my life spiritually? Let's go quickly here. It says in the book of Acts, the people, the Bereans, were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica. They received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. Improve your life spiritually by getting into the Bible and reading the Bible and studying the Bible. It says in Mark, in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, Jesus went out to a solitary place and there he prayed. In Luke chapter 4, Jesus, as his custom was, went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. So we read our Bible. We want to pray. You want to worship corporately. That's important. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. Service is good for you. And then sharing your faith is the next principle mentioned there. So download this at takecharge.life, takecharge.life. Also, special gift book for you. It was written several years ago by Dr. David DeRose. It's called Evading Ebola. Oh, what does Ebola have to do with anything? That's somewhere else. Ah, the health principles in that book are what you want to get. They are great, reiterating a lot of what you're learning right here. At takecharge.life, you can rewatch. You can watch previous episodes of Take Charge of Your Health. You'll find the link to share it with others so that they can take charge of their health also. It's been great having you here tonight. Physically, we want to thrive. Spiritually also. So let's crank it up. We'll meet again tomorrow night at the same place for more. Until then, God bless you.